Welcome to the Superconscious Success Podcast, where Jen and her Superconscious Success Family co-hosts bring you valuable content each and every week on topics relating to manifestation, spirituality, and most of all, using your superconscious to manifest success in all areas of your life. Now on to today's episode.
Hey there, Superconscious Success fam. Welcome back to another chapter reading where we are going to continue on with our book, Napoleon Hill's Grow Rich with Peace of Mind. I'm so excited to be bringing this particular chapter to you because it's actually about masterminds. Now, I have actually been involved in masterminds and I've also facilitated masterminds. And so therefore, I know how absolutely critical they are to helping us to really build ourselves and to really expand. Because when you have people around you that have like-minded consciousness, then there is absolutely nothing like it. Now, this chapter is going to go into that in much greater depth. If you've read Think and Grow Rich, he does go into it a bit in that book as well. And if you have not yet read the other chapters or listened to the other chapters, then go ahead and do that. Make sure you sign up for the Inner Circle at Superconscious Success and you'll get all the notes for it as well. So thanks so much for joining me for this chapter. I look forward to bringing it to you and I'll speak to you at the end of the chapter. So here we go. The Mastermind Group, a power beyond science. The great achievements of your life, first built as mind concepts, then made real, are not limited to the power of your own mind. A myriad of other minds can tune in upon yours and give you their thoughts through ethereal vibration. Forming a mastermind group is a good way to begin the process of tuning in, and when you form your group, you'll know you're using a technique which has mightily proved its benefit among many well-known men. All great achievements are the result of a multiplicity of minds working together harmoniously. Was Henry Ford ignorant? Rather than attempt to form your answer, which must come from within yourself, I shall tell you of an experience the founder of Ford Motor Company had in a courtroom. The experience really included everybody in that courtroom and a good many outside the courtroom as well. As we know, Mr. Ford had little formal schooling. Perhaps because of this, the Chicago Tribune, which took exception to some of his views on war, called him an ignoramus. Mr. Ford brought suit, charging the newspaper with libel. When the attorneys for the Tribune had Mr. Ford on the witness stand, they cross-examined him in an attempt to prove their statement was true. One question they asked was, how many soldiers did the British send over to subdue the rebellion in the colonies in 1776? With a dry grin, Ford replied, I don't know just how many, but I have heard it was a lot more than ever went back. There was laughter from the court, the jury, the spectators, and even from the frustrated lawyer who had asked the question. Ford kept calm through an hour or more of a similar questioning on schoolbook topics. At length, in reply to a question which was particularly obnoxious to him, the industrialist let off some steam. He observed that he had a row of electric push buttons hanging over his desk and that when he wanted a question answered, he placed his finger on the right button and called in the right man to answer that question. He wanted to know why he should burden his mind with a lot of useless details when he had able men around him who could supply him with all the information he needed. This trial occurred many years ago, and I dare say that only a minority of my readers recall how it came out. If you do not know, exercise your own power to develop information by going to the library and finding out. I will say, however, that Mr. Ford's remarks resounded through that silenced courtroom, through the nation and around the world. Surely Ford's friend Thomas Edison appreciated them, for he was another who had surrounded himself with able men through whom he vastly extended his own abilities and his own mind power, school education or no. Thomas Paine, whose keen mind helped both in drawing up the Declaration of Independence and in persuading its signers to translate their concept into reality, spoke in memorable terms of the great storehouse of knowledge which waits to be transferred to our own storehouse. I quote him in part, any person who has made observations on the human mind by observing his own cannot but have observed that there are two classes of what are called thoughts, those that we produce in ourselves by reflection and the act of thinking, and those that bolt into the mind of their own accord. I've always made it a rule to treat these voluntary visitors with civility, and it is from them that I have acquired almost all the knowledge that I have. As to the learning that any person gains from school education, it serves only like a small capital to put him in the way of beginning learning for himself afterwards. Every person or learning is finally his own teacher. Hence come the thoughts which do not originate within our own minds, out of our own experience. Often it is apparent that such thoughts are suggested by other persons in words or in writing, and later they play back from within our subconscious memories, or they may be a completely conscious process, as when we sit in conference with another. All of us, however, receive thoughts which are silently broadcast by other minds and receiving by our own. This too is a planted idea we touched upon previously and now shall examine in more detail. What is the mastermind? I visualize the mastermind as a formless, boundless reservoir of thought vibration. Not all of it can be available to any one person at any one time. When you're in harmony with another person or with a number of other people, however, the attunement of mind-to-mind results in a tuning in of incalculable value. A man who has a corps of assistants with whom he maintains amiable relations has at his disposal far more than the knowledge his assistants may give him by obvious means. Their minds constantly feed his through mental broadcast power and receive information from his mind as well. The same is true when friends or business associates form a mastermind group at which they discuss various topics or problems. Their several minds focused on the topic obviously add great power to the mind most occupied with it, but also an exchange of broadcast thoughts is affected right then, and also later when the persons involved may be far apart. This is not obvious as is speech or writing, but its power goes beyond anything science can completely explain. I've been greatly interested in observing how the science of this atomic age gives faith and credit in this direction to the science of 50 years ago. At that time, we could list 80-odd forms of physical matter. We list many more now, and we knew that matter is made of incredibly tiny particles with space between. We had begun to know there is so much space within matter that, in a sense, nothing is solid. You and I, the desk at which I write, my typewriter, this dot, are made of atoms. The atom in turn contains electrons which either revolve in orbits or vibrate rapidly to and fro. Other particles such as neutrons are now postulated, but the principle remains the same. Whether you observe the largest star that glitters in the sky or the smallest grain of sand among billions on a beach, it is a collection of particles, space, and electric charge. 50 years ago, we had begun to have some proof that even the most minute particles are not things, but bundles of vibrations. We knew too that various forms of energy proceed through air and space in their characteristic forms because of their varying frequency of vibration. Thus, vibrations beginning at about 15 per second and going up to about 15,000 per second are perceptible to the human ear as sound. Above that, we no longer hear vibrations, but at around 1,500,000 vibrations per second, that form of energy called heat begins and we can feel it with another one of our senses. Higher up the scale of vibration comes light, often combined with heat, and our eyes perceive this. The lowest light vibrations begin with deep red, the highest a violet, with all other colours in between. Above the vibrations of violet, some 3 million per second, lie ultraviolet and other vibrations invisible to the eye but detectable by instruments. Still higher up the scale, we cannot yet say how high, may lie the vibrations of thought, and these are the invisible, inaudible vibrations which flash from mind to mind. Dr. Alexander Graham Bell, whose name we justly associate with the telephone, was an authority on vibration. He noted that we have no ordinary sense that can appreciate the effect of any vibration between heat and light. He said, "There must be a great deal to be learned about the effect of these vibrations in the great gap where the ordinary human senses are unable to hear, see, or feel movement. The power to send wireless messages by either vibrations lies in that gap, but the gap is so great that it seems there must be much more. It seems to me that in this gap lies the vibrations which we have assumed to be given off by our brains and nerve cells when we think. But then again, they may be higher up in the scale beyond the vibrations that produce the ultraviolet rays. That's my own theory. It would be possible to cite many reasons why thought and vital force may be regarded as of the same nature as electricity. We may assume that the brain cells act as a battery and that the current produced flows along the nerves. But does it end there? Does it not pass out of the body in waves which flow around the world unperceived by our senses, just as the wireless waves passed unperceived before Hertz and others discovered their existence?" Field theory and thought transference. Einstein showed mathematically that vast fields of force pervade the universe. A field of force comes out of every wire that carries current, or we would have no electric motors, no radio or television, and would lack quite a few other conveniences. Why should not a field of force emanate from the electricity which constantly passes to and fro along the conducting nerves and cells of the body? Why should they not go around the world into space on forever? Now our world is both threatened and uplifted by the physical realization of Einstein's great mind concept of nearly 60 years ago, E equals mc squared. This formula governs the conversion of mass into energy and accounts for the enormous energy put to use in atomic power plants and the atomic bomb. In using atomic power, we prove once and for all for everyone to see that mass is energy. Since energy is vibration, everything undoubtedly is vibration. You and I now know we are vibration beyond the shadow of a doubt. Tune your radio to the known vibration rate of any radio station as indicated on the tuning dial, and you sensitize your radio to that particular vibration. The radio then changes it into vibrations you can hear. Is there anything strange about a natural tuning to the omnipresent thought vibrations of another mind, which already has shown its empathy with your own mind? It is no more strange than radio. Radio's laws at length were discovered. So shall the laws of thought broadcast and reception someday be discovered, and the natural apparatus we now use, but dimly, shall be at everyone's command. How to form and use your own mastermind group. You understand now that whenever two or more minds are blended in a spirit of perfect harmony for the pursuit of a definite purpose, there is born of that an alliance, a power which is greater than that of all of the individual minds combined. This is the mastermind principle. It does not interfere with your possession of yourself. In fact, one who is himself in all ways is all the more able to accept ideas from the minds of others peacefully and usefully, since he is in no danger of being overwhelmed. The science of personal achievement was born out of a mastermind alliance, my allies having been those 500 and more successful men whom I interviewed and worked with in the course of many years. A person who has peace of mind always gives as well as receives. As you apply the mastermind principle, you not only share your knowledge with others, but also place yourself in a position to receive generously from others. And that which you receive can multiply your power to grow rich far beyond your present conception. Here then are the steps to take in order to avail yourself of the boundless benefits of the mastermind principle. Step number one, your mastermind round table. Begin by inviting two or three people whom you know well to join you in your undertaking. Be sure that these people are in harmony with you and with one another. Explain that the major purpose of the alliance is mutual growth mentally and spiritually, while you certainly will accept the material benefits which naturally attend such development. Number two, you are not a debating society. Make it clear from the beginning that such controversial matters as politics, religion, and similarly touchy topics have no place in your group meetings. Your aim is to aid one another with knowledge based on the experience each member has gained from life. Three, your discussion is confidential. Discussion and cooperation must stay within the group. Knowing this, all will be encouraged to speak freely. Number four, the group will be allowed to grow. From time to time, the group may be enlarged by additional members. It should not be allowed to grow so large as to become unwieldy. Any new member must be subject to a unanimous vote of acceptance. Number five, provide for a trial election. With the exception of the original members of the mastermind group, members may be elected for 1 month or for some other convenient period. You should be perfectly frank about the necessity of making sure that any new member is in harmony with the others, and that if you ask him to leave the group, it is no reflection upon his personal worth. Number six, agree on general principles of life success. Bear in mind that if any one of your roundtable members does not believe, for instance, that he should give completely of his knowledge and experience, he will create disharmony and you may get nowhere. I suggest that you all agree on the principles set forth in this book in the list covering the qualities of peace of mind, forward, and self-possession, chapter 9. Also sit down together with the summing up list at the end of the book. Number 7, rotate your chairman and your board of directors. Each person should serve in turn as the chairman. He should see that all members take part in the discussion. The questions are asked freely and personal experiences freely described. He should ask each speaker to stand as he speaks to help him develop poise while speaking on his feet. He should enforce any time limit agreed upon so as to prevent the more verbose members from consuming more than their share of the time. Rotation of the chairman will automatically result in the rotation of the board who listen to the speaker, who thus wins a variety of minds to serve him. Number 8, when a group consists of fellow workers. When a mastermind group consists of employees of a single business, it should contain members of management as well as members of the rank and file. This plan has been followed with a great development of friendly cooperation, benefit to the business as well as benefit to the individuals concerned. and number 9, adopt a major purpose. In addition to the individual purposes and problems which will be aired, the group as a whole should adopt some major purpose or project to be carried on jointly by all its members for the benefit of people who are not in the group. One such project was that of conducting a personal problem clinic once a week, in which the public was invited to bring in a personal problem for consideration by the group, sitting as a personal problem court. When a project is completed, another should be chosen. Further instructions on your Mastermind Alliance. Since part of this book's purpose is to spare you from learning by trial and error, I shall set down some lessons already learned that way by myself and others. I suggest that you do not reveal the private purposes of your Mastermind Alliance to those outside the group. Remember the many who are wedded to failure and who channel their efforts not towards success but towards trying to tear down others. Such persons will scoff at the Mastermind principle. Their scoffing need not annoy you, but it may, and at any rate you need nobody's opinion but your own so far as forming your group is concerned. When you sit down with your Mastermind group, make sure you leave all negative points of view behind. Your meeting should be your greatest signal to find and hold a positive mental attitude. Moreover, as a leader of your Mastermind group, it is your duty to show your own enthusiasm and allow others to share this valuable emotion. Don't worry about the mechanics of sharing your enthusiasm, for there is no other emotion that is so catching. Take care to see that every member of the group receives something out of every meeting. Enthusiasm and cooperation will grow in proportion to the rewards each man bears away with him. A Mastermind group is not a place in which to bring competitors together. Nobody in the group should have reason to feel antagonistic towards any other member, nor have any motive for keeping secrets from him. Remember that confidence is the basis of all harmonious relationships. Form your group out of people in whom you have confidence. Make sure they have confidence in you. Millions of people need a personal problem clinic. I purposefully repeat that every Mastermind should have a group purpose which benefits those outside the group. This principle is so important that I shall enlarge upon the idea of the personal problem clinic, surely one of the best public services any group can perform. Let us look at a number of typical applications. If I were a life insurance agent, I would conduct such a clinic twice weekly if possible. The modern life insurance man is looked upon as a counsellor in several fields of family concern, budget for example. While giving of your time and telling your own life experience and that of others, you may well form an indelible impression upon men and women who need life insurance. If I were a clergyman, I would conduct a personal problem clinic going far beyond the members of my own congregation. I would have sitting with me as a board of counsellors the ablest members of my church, representing a wide variety of businesses and professions. I would expect no direct reward, but would be gratified if my services helped to fill the pews of my church every Sunday. If I were a school teacher, I would recognise that parents who are led to a harmonious solution of their problems are better parents, better able to help their children. I would conduct a clinic in the hopes that both generations would benefit and that the benefit would be reflected in the ability of my pupils to retain what I teach and grow into better citizens. If I were a physician, dentist, osteopath, chiropractor, or naturopath, I would conduct a clinic for the benefit of my patients and I would invite them to bring their friends and neighbours with them. Knowing that much illness originates in the mind, I would take this opportunity to heal where I could and in other cases to speed the process of healing. If I were the head of a family that included growing children, I would conduct a personal problem clinic for each member of the family. I might very well invite my neighbours to join. I've pointed out some of the benefits which may accrue to you from running a personal problem clinic. You may see no benefit, but rest assured that any benefit you send out into the world will come back to you in some way, at some time, perhaps 1,000 times multiplied. The late Mahatma Gandhi made himself one of the greatest benefactors of all time by the simple process of serving his countrymen without limit and without thought of financial reward. He was probably in the hearts of more men than any other man who ever lived. He drew several hundred million of his Indian countrymen to him of their own free will, and his reward, the independence of his nation, was a reward greater than most of us ever dream of achieving. Your Mastermind group of necessity will be a small group, yet when you extend it out into the world through a personal problem clinic, through adopting the sponsorship of a boys' club or some other welfare agency, or whatever other group project you may choose, your mind will automatically feel the effect of many other minds in harmony with your purpose. Here are illimitable riches. The Mastermind principle in politics. In speaking with some men who hold political office, I've been saddened momentarily by what they call their hard-headed attitude. Once they are voted into power, they tend to wield that power like a club, arbitrarily swinging their influence with little regard to those who must obey the rules they set. This is not so with the truly great men, but unfortunately a good many small-minded men achieve public office. If I were the mayor of a town or city, I would set up a people's person public clinic in the city hall. The councillors in the clinic would be the keenest minds in the city, lawyers, doctors, teachers, bankers, builders, a cross-section of such a variety of human talent that any citizen could rely upon finding an understanding ear. I would hold clinic sessions at some stated hour at least once a week. As the clinic attracted more and more people, I might find it advisable to organise into subgroups. I certainly would arrange for private counsel to be available in emergencies between meetings and to follow up on particular cases if need be. My reward? I believe that any mayor who did this would maintain himself in office for as long as he wished, yet this is only a secondary reward. The real reward would lie in knowing that I have lifted government to a new high plane of individuality and humanity. Your mind is strengthened by peace and harmony. Do you expect your life to bring you only harmony and peace? Life indeed would be dull if it did not have its times of conflict, of problems to be solved. We grow as we overcome difficulties. If the solving of problems were not so important, a part of the learning process, we would learn few of the lessons of life. When peace and harmony remain as the veritable foundation stones of thought and emotion, however, problems are solved with a strength which truly passeth understanding. Even temporary peace is a great sustaining force. Doctors often recommend a change of climate for certain types of patients. The climate itself may or may not have something to do with the healing process. More important is the change of scene. New faces, new landscapes bring the mind away from its accustomed squirrel cage of worries. Miracle cures have been effected when a patient walks out peacefully among the trees and the hills. As you become better and better acquainted with your own mind, you'll find it possible to hold harmony with your mind, no matter what goes on around you. Meanwhile, try consciously at some time of the day to attune your mind to peace, not conflict, rest, not striving. After a while, as you sit or walk or lie quietly alone, you may feel as though harmony is flowing into your mind from sources outside. Indeed, this is true, for it is possible for any harmonious mind to tune into yours when you have made your mind receptive. The importance of harmony in your home. Now you can see that when I've spoken of harmony in your home, I've spoken of more than a merely pleasant situation. Harmony in the home is a pervasive force which flows continually in and out of the mind circuits and conditions the mind to keep itself in peace and continued harmony. We live in a home where harmony and affection are the dominating spirits. Everything we do in our home gives us pleasure, including our work, which is a work of love. Now and again, my wife and I take a long walk or perhaps a drive into the country. We return refreshed with thoughts of new faces, new scenes, perhaps new experiences, and glad to return to a home that is good to come back to. Find your own way to get rid of worry, but keep it simple. In 2 Kings chapter 5, you may read the story of Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria. This rich and powerful man was afflicted with leprosy. He called upon the prophet Elisha to cure him, expecting Elisha to come up with some complicated and mysterious rigmarole. But Elisha merely said, "Go and wash in Jordan several times, and thy flesh shall come again to thee, and thou shalt be clean." Perhaps this story is a parable showing us that there generally is a simple way out of our troubles. I do not deny the existence of very serious troubles, but I have noticed that the great majority of troubles are minor annoyances which lead to a pattern of annoyance and worry. Feed your mind on little worries and it will develop quite an appetite for big worries. The greatest buttress of worry is sitting around and thinking about your worry. This adds strength to the worry, which thereupon sends stronger and stronger roots into the mind which nourish it. The greatest destroyer and uprooter of worry is transmuting the worry reaction into some sort of constructive activity. By going into action, make your mind focus on that action. By using your muscles however mildly, you give a rest to your mind. I have a friend who has a novel way of dealing with worries. He goes out into his garden and hoes vigorously until he has worked up a good perspiration. Others, perhaps not so vigorous, may cancel worry by attending to some bit of craftsmanship or carpentry. And then, of course, there is the excellent procedure of turning your mind towards helping someone else solve his problems, a method available even to the bedridden. But nothing complicated. In this book, we talk of many things, and you should do well to come back to this section now and then to refresh yourself with the idea that peace of mind is essentially a simple state of being. It is often remarked that some successful, highly placed men are really quite simple fellows when you get to know them. Indeed they are, no matter of how high an order may be their intelligence. An efficient mind attains a basic simplicity upon which all else is built. I am reminded of a man who was greatly benefited by participating in a mastermind alliance. He said that his greatest benefit came from being helped to see his problems through others' eyes, and thus to see at last how simple his problems were. He said he had been in the habit of multiplying his problems by each other and looking at the sun, which was tremendous. When he took his problems one by one, they were quickly solved, and his mind began clicking as it never had before. The supreme secret is inherent in this chapter, as a book is inherent in the mind that conceives its plan. So, wow, as you can tell by that chapter, masterminds are incredibly important, incredibly valuable. I love the whole concept of creating a personal problem clinic where people can actually go and the actual mastermind members can help them to figure out solutions. I absolutely love that idea, and it's something that I will most likely create as I form my masterminds going forward. I do actually have a Peace and Prosperity Mastermind, which Chris and I are going to be creating in the next like 6 months probably. And so if you are interested in that, then feel free to just message us at team@peaceandprosperity.com and we can send you out some more information about it. Lots and lots and lots going on with Super Conscious Success and the programs that I'm creating. And of course, all my chapter readings, I am loving bringing it to you. I hope you're enjoying them because the books that I'm bringing to you are ones that I really value. So thanks so much for joining me. Make sure you head across to the Super Conscious Success podcast. Check it out. There's some great, great episodes on there as well. And I've got lots more interviews and lots more solo episodes going. Head across to the Inner Circle at superconsciousSuccess.com. And then you can get, not only can you get the summary of this chapter, but I'm also going to do a document which will actually list those 9 important points for setting out a mastermind. So thanks so much for joining me today, and I look forward to catching up with you in the next chapter. Bye.